computer's online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for T1 at 20K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are a go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Len Osanek, and we are speaking to Ray McGinnis today. Been on Black Op Radio a few times, Canadian. Hello, Ray.
Hey, Len, good to speak with you again.
Yeah, very. I'm always looking forward to talking to you because you talk about issues that everybody's talking about, Trump and Biden and other things, and then, you know, mostly I focus on JFK assassination, MK Ultra, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King last week, things like that. But I like to keep abreast of what's going on and up to date. You have a new article at a website, Propaganda in Focus. I'll make a link to that where other people can, interested people can continue to find your work. And you are on Facebook, but this article is The End of Canada, The Shift from Democracy to Totalitarian Behavior in the Pandemic Era. I'm so glad that you can discuss it, let people know in case they hadn't read it, your views on this, and then we'll get into a few other little things. So sure. First of all, what prompted you to write this for this website?
Well, I have been concerned about the numbers of news stories that are really picked up in the alternative press in Canada, which kind of drip, drip, drip are different little examples here and there of a real shift away from what I would call the kind of liberal democratic norms throughout most of Canadian history. I mean, we've had our tainted moments here or there, but more or less, there's been an agreement about how we do things in Canada. And so there were just a hodgepodge of different things that on the one hand didn't seem to be related, but I began to reflect on all that was going on and thought, well, how can I write about this in some sort of a framework that makes sense? And thankfully, I have a book that I read back in 2007, 2008 by Dr. Naomi Wolf, who at the time was a liberal left celebrity in the Washington, D.C. area. Now she's not. But she was writing about the end of America, letter of warning to a young patriot, looking over the 20th century in her book to describe 10 strategies that politicians who have a tyrannical or dictatorial bent use to employ to weaken democracies and shift a democracy away from a healthy democracy to a dictatorial or fascist, authoritarian or totalitarian state. And so I thought, well, let me look at her book again and let me look at the 10 steps she describes and then look at Canada through the lens of those 10 steps and see how Canadian democracy is doing in 2024, you know, looking through that lens. So that's what I decided to take on when I wrote this article and to see what I could see with each of the steps. Of course, not all 10 of them are in play, but I would say that when I read Naomi Wolf's book back in 2007, I would say that none of these things were in play in Canada. And now, as we discuss this, you'll see I give examples where certainly there are things that are shifting that Canadians and others who are interested in the health of Canada's democracy should be thinking about.
You know, it's amazing that when I read about, you mentioned Dr. Fauci, and now people are looking into what are the real trials going on, and what's this about blood clots, and can you even trust the CDC, the health department that are supposed to say, yeah, these, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs. I think the CIA said when people don't know what to believe, we'll have won the propaganda war. And it's like that, that I almost sit and heckle the news. No, it's not my mother's. She had the TV on, the news is on there, and as the reporters are blathering out, the yelling back at the TV, lie, that's a lie, you know, whatever, you know, they're talking about whatever, there's more money for Ukraine, hand over fist, they can't print it fast enough, and tent cities and in all over North America and every city, you know, just, it's mind-boggling just from the top down how, like John Lennon had called these guys psychopaths, right, you know?
Yeah, that's, yeah. And like when we, like, I mean, as I began to write about, you know, like, you know, so here's, you know, Naomi Wolf looking at Hitler's Germany, Stalin's Soviet Union, Mussolini's Italy, East Germany after World War II, Chile under Pinochet, Czechoslovakia, Romania under Ceausescu, Communist China, North Korea, and you know, and numbers of examples of things going on under George W. Bush with Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay and so on. And I remember, you know, so it's very uncomfortable when some of what she describes starts to be kicking in closer to home in Canada. And of course, I'm a seasoned watcher of the news, I mean, consumer of the news. I'm not a TV watcher, but I read mostly. And when something like this whole, you know, the whole pandemic hit us in early 2020, I'm someone who, I mean, I'm not somebody who the most, I mean, unless I have a long suit in something, and I didn't have a long suit in public health responses to diseases, for example, but I gave the government in Canada the benefit of the doubt. You know, I went along with, I wore masks and I did the social distancing and so on. But now, you know, looking at things, as I mentioned early in my article, I mean, people go back and have all these kind of wars about facts, but it's interesting that even USA Today fact checkers concluded it was true that Dr. Anthony Fauci warned the Trump administration on January 10th, 2017, before Trump was even inaugurated, that there's going to be a surprise infectious disease outbreak in your term, Donald Trump. Like, it's quite an astonishing thing to be certain of. And then to find out, you know, reading, you know, in the Daily Mail in the UK from October of 2023 said, oh, by the way, you know, but in 2018, Dr. Fauci was involved in giving money and running a lab in Montana with the National Institute of Health that received the coronavirus strain from the lab in Wuhan, China, you know, and this is in 2018 before the pandemic began. So, you know, people are right, certainly by now, to be asking some tough questions about the whole story we were given in Canada and everywhere else was, this is, oh, we're all blindsided, this great big surprise. But it seemed that it wasn't so surprising to some people that were doing all this gain of function research. In any event, I don't get into that a lot in the article, but...
But just, I hate to interrupt you, but it's an aside though, listening to, looking back at watching him argue with Dr. Rand Paul and, you know, him arguing, saying, you don't know what you're talking about, right? And he said, this is gain of function. You know, we have emails. You guys are just outright lying. And indignant to the end. And then Fauci retires, you know, I think he's even got Secret Service protection.
Yeah,
it's awful.
Yeah, so in the first, you know, I just list the steps as Naomi Wolf lists them in her book, The End of America. And the first step is where an external and an internal threat is invoked. Often, I mean, it can be the case where simply an external threat is invoked. For example, at the beginning of World War II, with Hitler's Germany, there were a bunch of, I think as it is, a number of German convicts that were dressed up in Polish military uniforms. They were placed in a border town alongside Poland in a radio station and they were shot to death. And then the papers reported in Germany in August of 1939 that these Polish soldiers had come across the border and tried to, you know, take over a radio station. And thank God the Nazi troops went in there and shot them. Now, you know, we know later on that actually the Polish soldiers, in quotes, were German convicts dressed up in Polish soldier uniforms. But in any event, an external threat was invoked. So the story for, you know, German citizens starting World War II was they were defending themselves. They had a right to defend themselves against Poland. So, of course, in 2020, we had an external threat in Canada, as described all around the world, which was the COVID-19 virus. And there was an awful lot of decisions that were made that now look really strange. Like one that I mentioned is placing people on ventilators. And it was clear starting in early April, Business Insider, numbers of other newspapers reporting that 80%, I think in India it was up to 95% of the people being put on ventilators in hospitals were dying. And I mean, finally, enough doctors started to say in the New York area, you know, maybe the best way to keep these patients alive is to not put them on the ventilators at all. But, you know, it all added to the hype of how dangerous this external threat was. And also we were all on lockdowns, even though the Johns Hopkins Institute said later on that the lockdowns only reduced COVID deaths by 0.02%. So it's, you know, we find no evidence that the lockdowns, school closures, border closures, limiting gatherings have had a noticeable effect on COVID-19 mortality. But it certainly helped all of the actions, the ventilators, the social distancing, which Fauci down in the States admitted later on, well, you know, we just came up with he said with the social distancing, it just seemed to happen to arise. Like, you know, there was no kind of solid reason why they would say 6 feet apart or 4 feet or 10 feet, but they just decided to make it a thing. So in any event, it all added to the sense of this dreadful external threat. And then the internal threat named over and over again was the unvaccinated, who were said to be 99% responsible for the spread of the virus. I read recently a paper that came out published by the Liberal Party of Canada for one of the Liberal members of Parliament in June of 2022. And they were even saying that it was clear that this smear about the unvaccinated was not true at all. It wasn't borne out. And also they were fudging the numbers because people were getting the vaccines. And then if they went back into the hospital because they had an adverse reaction, they weren't counted as vaccinated until 14 days after their dose. So that was, you know, also a problem in terms of data, of honest data collection. So, but the unvaccinated, I mean, we had the Toronto Star running front page stories. You know, if an unvaccinated person catches it from someone who is vaccinated, boo-hoo, too bad. I have no empathy for the willfully unvaccinated, let them die. And there was a lot of this, this kind of discussion. I mean, the Prime Minister talked about anybody who was unvaccinated as anti-science and racist and misogynist and unacceptable fringe minority and so on. So, and consider that we had, I think, around up to 6 million Canadians who chose not to get vaccinated. So it's not a small number at all. But the internal threat, this people were, you know, many Canadians were seeing a person who was unvaccinated as a clear and present danger to their health and mortality. I think that,
well, they were sold that. I mean, it didn't come out of nowhere, right? Like you mentioned.
Yeah, and of course, Canada is not alone. This was a narrative that was sold across all Western countries and in China, you know, whatever. So, it was used effectively, but it's proven to have been a very dishonest assessment to scare the public about an internal threat. And it really tore a lot of families apart, a lot of friendships, working relationships. So,
well, you know, the kind of stuff you saw on TV says, look, you could be a carrier infected and you don't even know it. You might not have any symptoms. And I remember just in the back of my mind saying, well, how can that be? How dangerous can it be that I'm a carrier? I don't have any symptoms. I don't even know it. But if someone's elderly and a diabetic, I could give it to them. Well, I don't want to do that. But in the back of my mind, you're going, you know, who said you can be a carrier and not even know it? Like, the idea I thought was, if you were going to go on an airplane, they go, well, I'll take a test. Like, give me a test beforehand because I don't want somebody else on the plane who is, you know, sick. So just ask everybody, saying, if you are going to take a flight or something like that, or a Greyhound, whatever, you have to take this test. And they go, okay, you're not sick. You don't have a fever. You're not sick. Fine. For me, you know, just my limited point of view, right? But they were banning everything. You could go to McDonald's. You could go to Walmart. I think you could go to a liquor store. But you couldn't go into any other restaurant without being at least vaccinated twice and showing your papers, right? You know?
I'll get into this. I think I might mention this later in the article. But when there's a travel mandate case that was trying to go before the courts that the government ruled as moot. It was Sean Rickard and Carl Harrison, Brian Peckford, and Maxime Bernier were the plaintiffs. And there was 6 weeks of discovery in June, July of 2022. And they had some of the top people in Transport Canada and Public Health Agency of Canada, among others, speaking about the travel mandates. And in the recommendations of what Public Health Agency of Canada was suggesting that Transport Canada do with, you know, planes flying in Canada and internationally, they said, well, you know, you can wear masks. Of course, they're not going to wear masks once they're served food or drink, which is interesting because apparently then the virus decides to take a break whenever we're drinking or eating something on the plane. But never mind. So, and I'll also, you know, do some social distancing. If it's a half empty flight, maybe go to sit in a row where there's just a few of you. But one of the things that the Public Health Agency of Canada did not recommend to Transport Canada was a vaccine passport, mandatory vaccination. And I think it was Dr. Celia Lorenko or Dr. Lisa Waddell who were asked under cross-examination about this in the, you know, June, July of 2022, why Public Health Agency of Canada was not recommending to Transport Canada that people all be vaccinated. And they said because there was no epidemiological basis, or, you know, there was no case to be made that this would be effective. And you have Transport Canada, you know, key personnel trying to almost badger Public Health Agency to sort of give them some sort of basis for why they're going to have to put these vaccine mandates in place for people to travel, and like in late October of 2021. And they'd just be stonewalled or just given a bunch of platitudes. There was nothing. It just seemed like it was a political decision, not a decision made on anything coming out of the Public Health Agency of Canada, which is very concerning. That's, you know, so.
Okay, so on the seven items, are we on to number two then?
We're on to number two, yeah. And this is a short one because number two would be establishing secret prisons. You know, I mean, we had people who were traveling back into Canada. Who they didn't have their up-to-date vaccination, they were sent to quarantine hotels, and as you know, people could be fined up to $6,500 if they didn't obey the the conditions of their quarantine. But nonetheless, the locations of the hotels was made public, and although there was a member of parliament named Randy Hillier who warned that the government was going to set up internment camps for the unvaccinated, that hasn't happened. Some people might say, well, if there are secret prisons, we wouldn't know about them because they're secret. But in any event, I don't have anything to say about Canada having, you know, black sites or whatever like the CIA has. So I think that we can say on that category, Canada's, we haven't gone down that path. And number three is develop a paramilitary force. There was a real crackdown on the Freedom Convoy in Ottawa in February of 2022. The police that were really doing the crackdown, most of the Ottawa police force officers were swapped out of doing the crackdown, and the people who were doing the cracking, you know, beating up protesters, were police from other municipalities and the RCMP. There have been some suggestions. I remember reading about some suggestions that maybe there were, you know, soldiers of fortune or mercenaries or whatever being brought in internationally to go over to Ottawa. But, you know, insofar as I could do an online search, I didn't find anything to suggest that that had happened. Somebody may know, and I can update the article. But I don't see anything like that. But very recently, just the other day, on social media, Prime Minister Trudeau and Bill Blair, who is the emergency preparedness minister, were talking about the need for involving the Canadian military in helping to deal with civilian domestic issues. So, you know, if the government is now thinking of more broadly involving the Canadian armed forces in dealing with political dissent, that's a problem. It may not technically be developing a paramilitary force, but it raises concerns for numbers of people. The step four is more familiar to people, especially since Edward Snowden talked about surveillance of the NSA. But step four is surveilling ordinary citizens. In Canada, certainly we have our surveillance. You know, I mean, even if you go just going online, the moment I look up, you know, holiday in Puerto Vallarta, all of a sudden I've got all kinds of little things populating my computer, telling me about new deals on hotels and restaurants in Puerto Vallarta for weeks on end. But we have, you know, people can see, you know, anybody.
Well, you have to assume that they see everything. Don't think that you've got a password or whatever. I mean, it's on a, you know, a light pipe or fiber optic or whatever it is, right? They make a Y and they siphon off everything. I mean, we're part of the Five Eyes.
Yeah,
and,
we are.
I think from what you were talking about, you know, the government clamping down, I think Australia might be a little worse.
Yeah. So one of the things that we have before the parliament, it's not been passed yet, is Bill C-63, which is the online harms bill. It's intended to stem child pornography, which is a good thing, but we already have criminal code laws in place to address the problem. And we also have in place all kinds of ways to deal with hate speech. But what this bill, if passed, will also enable to happen is protocols for individual citizens and groups to report to the Canadian Human Rights Commission, you know, online speech regarding them has occurred is unfair. People could have to pay fines of $50,000 in violation of hate speech. But you know, anonymous complaints.
Yeah, and also, right. Yeah, and these human rights commissions, and you know, who defines hate? You know, because that's how I first started listening to Jordan Peterson. He was trying to warn people. Said, "Listen, you can't just tell me I have to use these pronouns, or you know, my university will be fined. You know, there'll be all these arbitrary." New terms are coming up, and if you misgender someone, for instance, that's hate speech. They're liable to be, you could be fired.
Yeah, I mean, there's also
it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, with this bill, somebody who complains, like I'm maybe a citizen of Vancouver, I want to complain about somebody who I've read about or saw something online who's maybe lives in Halifax, Nova Scotia. If I feel offended or feel that something is hateful, my own personal perception, it's nice to know that my complaint lodged with the Canadian Human Rights Commission could result in my being awarded up to $20,000 for alerting authorities about an online hateful harm that somebody else has done. I think that that's a concern because some people, I mean, you could have things where you've got ex-partners in a marriage that aren't very happy with each other, and they could complain about someone's hateful. I mean, it could really devolve, because giving people that alert the authorities of a complaint and saying, hey, you can get $20,000 for alerting us to some concerning hate speech, that could end up being an incentive that could go in the wrong direction.
What bothers me is this definition of hate. What was one of the penalties, 7 years in prison?
You could have life in prison. I mean, life in prison for advocating genocide. Now, I mean, again, it's like, well, what does it mean to advocate genocide? I mean, what happens if somebody is in a history class talking about something that's been referred to as genocide in some, you know, in the 1890s or in some country, or, you know, what if there's a class debate and there's some people that are saying, well, you know, it's pretty awful what happened here in Austria-Hungary or whatever it was, but maybe we can't call it genocide because of the following reasons, like some sort of academic, you know, argument. But what if other people in that class think, well, they're really offended that that person doesn't think that what happened was genocidal, and then they end up in jail. I mean, I think your question about what is the definition of hate, and what does it then, it's going to corral people to be very careful about what they say.
Oh yeah. I can't make because I'm not, known comedian, that I could get away with something and saying that's a comedy bit. But, you know, I'd love to say many things on the internet that I have to think, oh, they're going to freeze my account. They might lock me out. Like, even I stopped posting stuff on YouTube because they took out something. They called it medical disinformation. And it was an interview I did with someone, a professor, I think, talking about the origin of AIDS and things like that. And it was from 2007.
Yeah.
And it just got flagged and pulled down. And they didn't even give me – well, I guess I could appeal on that whole pointless, you know, holding your breath, right? I'm not going to bother appeal. I started going to Rumble, and I'm just going to post stuff on Rumble from now on. You know, like, there should be a view and a dissenting view. And then, you know, even if the other fella says, I don't agree with that point of view, but I'll meet you halfway. Like, I see some of, you know, your reasoning, and especially in science and when people are talking about where these mandates come from. I guess the fact that I'm a little bitter is because of the, you know, when I listen to Robert Kennedy Jr. and he explains some of the lies that the these guys are doing, and trust the science. It's got like a dollar sign for the S in science, right? These guys are bought and paid for, and if you give them enough money, they'll print any report. And the fact that Fauci seems to have got away with just outright lying to Congress about so many items, and then you find out, well, maybe if they didn't have these labs, this wouldn't have happened, you know?
Yeah.
And do you think they leaked it on purpose? Is this part of like, not Agenda 21, but there was some 2019... God, the number escapes me. But do you know what I mean? There was like they were running a scenario.
Yeah. Event 201.
Right, Event 201. I mean, it's like when you read the Northwoods documents or something like that, or Gulf of Tonkin, you're going, you're kidding me. You're kidding me. And everybody fell for it.
Well, it doesn't look good when you have someone like Dr. Fauci involved in confidently saying that there will be a surprise infectious disease pandemic And during Donald Trump's term, which there was, and he's saying this, you know, 10 days before Trump gets inaugurated. And then he's involved in this, lab in Montana that's working with the coronavirus from Wuhan. And he's also involved in funding gain of function that connects, the University of North Carolina and a couple others with Wuhan.
Right, right. And when they got a bit of a pushback from the Obama administration, they just moved it to, I forget the other name, but they gave this other company, Front, money to pump back into Wuhan, right?
Yeah. Yes, it seems like a reckless gamble and carelessness in the extreme, and
that's giving it an honest view, though. But if you look at it from a jaded, you go, like you say, did they plan this? Is this leak all along? You know, yeah. Is this? I mean, it's quite sinister, and you think, well, I've gone too far, but. I don't mind listening to some, previously there would be somebody like Alex Jones or someone having someone on to talk about it, but I don't think they should be banned. If they have something that you feel is too outrageous, yeah, you wait 10 years and you go, geez, maybe they weren't completely correct, but half of what they said turned out to be true.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of
what you're going with you're looking back at Naomi's 2007 book,
yeah,
and going, look at all these things like boiling a frog in water, right? You just start the water slowly and they don't notice.
Yeah. I mean, I can, like a recent April 6th story in the Telegraph in the UK, the headline reads, Pfizer accused of bringing discredit on pharmaceutical industry after COVID social media posts. UK watchdog rules company breached regulatory code 5 times, including promoting unlicensed medicine. So there's certainly lots of problems regarding the integrity of what Pfizer did to represent the vaccine product it was promoting. So, this gets a bit beyond all of what I talk about.
Keep thinking about Rachel Maddow when she was like matter-of-factly saying, it stops the virus dead. It stops it. You take it. It doesn't go on and you don't get sick and nobody else does. And, and then you go, that didn't age well.
Yeah. No, certainly not, listening to people say, oh, I just got my fourth dose, and oh, now I've got COVID.
Fourth, so. I think they're on the 10th.
Oh, I know. But back in the day, I would hear people say this, and then they complained that they got COVID, and they thought, if I got this second booster at the time, that I'd be fine. But, with the infiltration of citizens group, which is step 5, in Canada, you may remember the summit in Montebello, Quebec in 2007, and there were three Sûreté de Québec officers dressed as protesters and arrested for disruptive behavior, they were only found out as infiltrating the protest because they were all wearing police-issued boots. Do you remember that?
No, I watched that. I saw that, and that was something that Alex Jones featured on his channel. And, like I say, love him or hate him, he's right about some things. And, you have to be pretty jaded even to be looking at it. You would think, what legitimate law agency would be infiltrating and send these guys in as agent provocateurs to rile up the crowd, to throw rocks in there or more, and then start a riot? And then they say, oh, see, we need more funding for the police because of all these riotous protesters, and they're the guys starting it.
And we've talked about like the Coutts Four, the four men who were at the blockade in Coutts, Alberta, across from Sweetgrass, Montana, who were arrested on conspiracy to commit murder charges. And some of the arrests were prompted by RCMP officers that were presenting as young, very attractive female 20-something or early 30-something females who were chatting up a number of guys and maybe trying to invite them in conversations about, wouldn't you love to just, overthrow the government? I don't know what they said, but trying to engage them in provocative conversations that could then be used if you got some little sound bites and cherry picked them to make a case that there might be some people who wanted to overthrow the government and wanted to murder RCMP officers in Coutts. Of course, now two of the four had all of the original charges dropped on the 6th of February, which really calls into question, well, what could be the case against the remaining two, Tony Oleanik and Chris Carbert, given that the other two, Chris Lysak and Jerry Morin, have been they pled to minor offenses like that were not part of the original indictment, like failure to store a gun or like a rifle, like a hunting rifle, behind a, you know, in a
with the
closet.
Bolt removed or locked up. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I mean, normally if somebody fails to lock a rifle in a closet, they get a fine. They don't end up in jail for 2 years.
Yeah, and I think there's public pressure, you know, due to social media really helped that. Because, you know, normally people would not, what the hell's going on over there? I never even heard of Coots, Alberta.
Yeah.
People said, well, these guys are being held without charges. They're just being held. It seems indefinitely. And then the Crown is, that's a problem that we're seeing a lot of, that like these agent provocateurs invent this crime where they're rushing in with give us more money and we'll be the solution, when there was wasn't any problem before. And like you say, if they're sending in good looking women, you know, at a bar, they call that a honeypot or a honey trap, you know, like kind of thing, you know, like, oh, come on, man. Like guys in the middle of nowhere in some bar bragging, yeah, I'd like to, you know, do whatever. And I'm afraid to even say that right now. If this should end up on YouTube or something like that, we'll get blocked for, like, it's really appalling.
Because
this should be a level playing field where if you had to go to someone and said, listen, you could tell by what I was saying, either I was making a joke or I was making an example. So if somebody had said, or we're talking about the Reichstag fire, you know, how they've blew up the parliament buildings, but, you know, that seemed to be a false flag. You know, it's not what it seems. You know, how many things are going on here in the Five Eyes?
Yeah. And so it's, you know, like, with that whole thing, I mean, you know, there's, you know, definitely infiltration of citizen groups. But to what extent, you know, it's hard for me to make an assessment. But I think that people, I mean, there is, like, on the one hand, like with the FLQ, the Front for Liberation of Quebec crisis in October 1970, I could see how, you know, I maybe support RCMP officers going into to undercover to see what's happening in the FLQ cell groups, but I wouldn't support RCMP officers going off and setting a barn on fire till it burns down and then blaming it on the FLQ when it was only the instigation of the RCMP that burnt down the barn, as reported in the McDonald Commission that came out in 1981. So there's a way in which infiltration of citizen groups can very quickly go south, where police are needing to or wanting to blame things on citizens that are not the case. Like the case of those two, Nuttall and Cordy, who were alleged to have been trying to plot to, you know,
blow up the parliament buildings in British Columbia, right?
Yeah, the provincial. Yeah.
And, you know, I'll add to this, like, the very strange case of Timothy McVeigh, you know, just what went on there. But look, let's get back to your other numbers. What are we
on? We're up on number six now, which is arbitrarily detain and release citizens. So this is often a departure from the normal practice before, you know, back in the glory days of democracy in Canada. I mean, Tamara Leach was became the public face of the Freedom Convoy. She was arrested for mischief, counseling to commit mischief on the 17th of February, 2022. She was denied bail and then granted bail in early March of 2022. She was not supposed to be in contact with other protesters without her lawyers present. Now, on the 16th of June of 2022, she was at a gala event by the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, where she was awarded the George Jonas Freedom Award, and Rex Murphy, who used to be the host of Cross Country Checkup on CBC for many years, was the keynote speaker who gave a tribute to Tamara Leach. At the gala, she appeared alongside fellow protester Tom Morazzo. Her lawyers were you know, nearby. The photo took like seconds to take, but this was all of a sudden made out to be a breach of her bail conditions, and so there was suddenly a Canada-wide warrant for her arrest in June of 2022. I mean, time moved on. She's ended up spending 49 days in prison. Back in the fall of 2023, a judge in a court in Ottawa threw out the whole question of her breaching her bail conditions back in June of 2022 at this gala event were kind of tossed out and dismissed. Like it was just a real misreading of what those bail conditions were. So, but it's there's been numbers of people who, you know, the treatment of numbers of dissenting protesters in relationship throughout the pandemic has been quite severe and quite off course for how police would normally want to be behaving. I mentioned in my article, Canadian Armed Forces decorated veteran from the Afghan War, Christopher Deering. He's wearing his medals, peacefully protesting on the 18th of February. And then he's, you know, beat up by a whole bunch of officers. And then he's thrown, driven around in a dark van and then dropped off after driving around for an hour and a half or half an hour, whatever it is. And he's dropped off in a remote area out, in a kind of industrial area in the Ottawa area. He has no money, can't make any phone call. I mean, his own cell phone goes dead because it's minus 25 Celsius. So that's, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's pretty darn cold. And so, you know, they apprehend him and then they just release him and say, oh, the charges are dropped. But meanwhile, he's been beaten up. He has no idea where he is, you know. So this kind of behavior is not, what we like to see in Canada. And ironically, at the very same time that this was happening, our own federal government, just days before, had spoken on the occasion of the first anniversary of the Declaration Against Arbitrary Detention in state-to-state relations. So Canada, the government of Canada, is busy protesting any situation where an individual would be arbitrarily detained on their way between two nations. And meanwhile, we're arbitrarily detaining Canadian citizens domestically and couldn't care less.
Yeah, something's going to change.
Yeah. So number seven is kind of builds on what number six about arbitrarily detaining and releasing people.
Well, before we get to seven, you recall that reporter who was walking up to member of parliament to ask them a question, and then an undercover cop just walks into him from behind and says, "You assaulted me," and then they arrest him. "You assaulted me," and the good thing it's on camera, where the guy says, "No, you walked into me from behind. I wasn't even looking. I was holding a microphone up to," and you could see the whole thing was set up. It was really sickening.
Yeah, yeah. David Menzies with Rebel News trying to ask
Menzies.
Menzies was trying to ask questions of Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland.
Yeah.
And and then he ended up going in a van to prison, to jail. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think they let him out. I think they just handcuffed him, put him in the van, and he was there for an hour or two. But it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's arbitrary detention that we don't like you.
Yeah.
And you're not pro-government.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. It's certainly not what I want to see in terms of, you know, Canada going forward, where we can just, where it becomes the norm. We all know that police just arbitrarily arrest and detain and then release people, you know, ad hoc, you know, for something to do.
Well, they used to do that before, like these World Trade events, or there was something in Canada in Toronto where that were a couple of people were arrested like ahead of time and detained, and they said, "Well, you were going to be a threat to this, so we're preemptively arresting you." I haven't heard of that happening too much before, but lately, but that was something that was going on. You know, like they would just target people, and with this Menzies guy, I'll have to make a link to that in case anybody didn't see it. You just can't believe it that you know, and listening to the guy said, "You assaulted me."
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to jail for assault, I better look like assault.
Yeah, exactly. So step seven is targeting key individuals. And this is where, in the playbook of politicians with a dictatorial bent, if you target individuals in different sectors of society, and then it gets reported, people will learn that maybe if they don't want to get in trouble, they'll just keep their heads down. So I cited just four. I mean, I could have made the whole article about nothing but examples of key individuals who've been targeted in Canada in the last 4 years. Amy Hamm is a nurse in British Columbia. She's under investigation since November 2020 with the British Columbia Colleges of Nurses and Midwives. The Professional Conduct Review was initiated because of her, quote, off-duty conduct. And her off-duty conduct consisted of a positive comment online regarding Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling in the United Kingdom questioning the safety of hormone blockers for children and youth. In the old world pre-pandemic, if somebody was to offer an opinion about what they think about a certain topic of the day, that would be just sort of what we all do. But now, apparently, this woman's been, this nurse has been put through, 3.5 years of legal fights. And also, like, the College of Nurses and Midwives wanted her to keep all of what was going on a secret. So not only will they try and make you lose your license to practice, they want to say, oh, and by the way, we don't want the public to know that we're persecuting you. A similar case with a doctor. There's many, many doctors who've been read the Riot Act and lost their license in Canada. Dr. Kulvinder Kaur Gill. She's a doctor who started going on social media in the summer of 2020, questioning the lockdowns as a policy, and she saw the lockdowns as catastrophic, that would cause irreversible harms, and she said that there's no medical scientific reason for this prolonged, harmful, and illogical lockdown. All of what she was saying is reflected by the Great Barrington Declaration, by Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, Martin Kulldorff, and many other, nearly a million scientists and doctors, around the world have said that this kind of policy is completely irresponsible.
Right. Just for someone who may not know heard of the Great Barrington Declaration, can you just add a little more to that?
So there were numbers of doctors in the United States who were questioning lockdowns as a policy. They thought that the best thing to do is to treat the elderly, and those elderly who are most at risk being the ones who have multiple comorbidities and who are obese. And otherwise, let the general population carry on with as little disruption as possible. This also reflects the wisdom of all of the emergency preparedness for dealing with any pandemics in Canada for many decades, going back to World War II, if not earlier, which was to deal with, to as little disruption as possible to the economy. And to workers and all of that, and it was clear that there was very little, the people who were under 60 had very little risk of dying. I mean 99.9% of anyone who was under 60 was going to, they might not even know they had it. They might have a mild case. Or they might have they might go to hospital, but they were going to. Almost certainly going to get the virus and then recover from it.
Right, and I guess they're saying, as any flu, But a certain amount of people will catch this. They'll recover. They'll build an immunity. They'll pass that, you know, that on, and it will slowly work its way out. But this declaration, I guess, was, you know, like a nice document signed by quite a few noted physicians and professors and just saying we have an alternate point of view and you should consider this.
Exactly. The doctor.
I mean, it wasn't any ordering or, you know, demands. It was just, we the undersigned, suggest these steps.
Yes. And so this all was happening down in the States in the fall of 2020. And so Dr. Anthony Fauci in the USA and Francis Collins, I think, is in the United Kingdom, said we have to take down a devastating takedown of these doctors that are suggesting the lockdowns not be continued with. And so they referred to the doctors from, you know, Oxford and Harvard and Yale and Stanford as fringe medical quacks and things like that. So, but I think now, I mean, there's enough. There was enough before the pandemic began to say that lockdowns would not be a good policy, and certainly there's, you know, tons of it now. And so, in Dr. Kulvinder Gill's situation, she's been taken to task not because she was wrong. I mean, they wouldn't really consider her evidence at all, but it wasn't so much that she was wrong about her view of the lockdowns being harmful, but she was not in alignment with the, quote, accepted facts that public health was promoting.
Right, a narrative.
The accepted facts. So it's not about it's like public health can't admit that they were wrong, and so the College of Surgeons and Physicians and Surgeons in Ontario is, you know, finally I think they fined her a reduced fine of $300,000, but that's, you know, that's, that again is a warning to people to, if you fall out of, step out of line with the messaging from public health, there're going to be severe consequences for your own ability to practice and your financial viability.
The most public case is Joe Rogan talking about, well, a doctor prescribed him ivermectin, you know, in 3 days, so he was better. And he said he didn't, you know, get it from down at the stables, the attack dogs that everybody can see that was on, like, for calling it horse paste and everything. I said, no, I was prescribed an amount. I think they do it by weight or something, body weight. But, you know, whatever it is, I'm not a doctor. He said, there's other cures. There may be natural, but here's one, ivermectin. Or just start eating healthy, be healthy. Vitamin D, zinc. I mean, before that, I never really thought, who the hell's going to take zinc? But I was taking vitamin C and zinc, you know, you just heard enough people say that there are enough things that you can do to improve your health so that even if you caught COVID, you wouldn't be as sick. And you sure didn't see that. Played everything on the quote vaccine, which is an RNA spike protein. We don't have to get into that, but I'm just really interested that you took the time to write this, and any article you have, I want to help promote and let people read for themselves.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I'll just mention briefly then step eight. I won't go into all of the people I talk about, but then step eight is just restricting the press. And what we've seen the last number of years is very slanted news coverage. I think in the National Citizens Inquiry, that was kind of off message, went from coast to coast interviewing people and what had happened during the pandemic in Canada. And the CBC, I think, reported it once in a superficial way, but very important and damning testimony from coast to coast about, and including from people like Marianne Kloack, who worked for 34, 35 years at the CBC in Winnipeg. And she was, you know, she's pretty much a household name in Winnipeg. And people were coming up to her telling her, you know, I'm really worried about getting my, having my children get the vaccine. Or they come up and say, you know, I went and got it, trying to do my part, and now I have Bell's palsy, or, you know, whatever the stories were. And she found that there was no way that the CBC was going to run the story, any kind of a story that would, quote, create vaccine hesitancy. And so she said, you know, she would talk about how for the first time in her professional life, she found that the CBC was really taking the role of cheerleading public health and not asking any tough questions at all. And so, you know, this is what we've been treated to the last 4 years in Canada. And it seems that it's it continues to this day, where any questioning is, you know, vilified of anything that's not part of the government message, you know, pretty much. It's hard to see when our national broadcaster, which has traditionally had good reporters asking the tough questions, and it's just completely collapsed.
Well, I'm glad to see that Joe Rogan's still going. I'm glad to see that Tucker Carlson is doing good things, and that's somebody who I was not a fan of.
Yeah.
And the fact that Alex Jones hasn't been totally taken off the air. You don't have to always agree with these guys. And actually, in the case of Alex Jones, I liked him, but I turned it on one day and he was just yelling and ranting and raving. It was too much for me. I just turned it off, you know?
Yeah.
So every now and then, like I tell people, yeah, you know, I tune in to see what's he talking about today, this month, you know, not as often as I did before, but there should be room for debate. And when these things are talking about mandates in Canada, especially when they seem to be preceded by, like in the mandates led to the arrest of the Coutts Four, right? These are wholly manufactured things. Even with the trucker protest, if they had said, listen, we want to meet with you, you know, and if Trudeau came down there and said, okay, I'll meet with you, like, here's what I can do or here's what I can't do. Maybe there's some middle ground, but there's no conversation like that. And then on the side of the coin is, you guys are all crazy. And then 20 years later, or, you know, in the case of the JFK assassination, it takes half a century for the facts to come out, for people to, you know, finally be able to dig up what they're, you know, and you went to Ottawa to sit in some of these hearings. I mean, you walked the walk. I mean, I tune in to things with interest, but you went there and you said, I want to see what these guys are saying in person. So that's why I've got a lot of respect for you that, you know, if you report on something, you know what you're talking about. And mentioned about the police chiefs and that in Ottawa, where they were saying, this is the most peaceful protest we've ever seen. And if it's a protest, they're there saying, someone from the government who's supposed to represent us, come down and meet with us. And of course, they were successful in a backhanded way, where they finally had to admit, like, I think the whole country is going to turn on us if we don't do something. So they started relaxing the mandates. But it could have been done better. And that, you know, many things in life. But just when you think it's so crooked and there's a narrative to something, like, thank God that we have the internet now. And that's what a failing we found from the Twitter files. Just they had all these guys, ex-FBI and all that, in the office, right, you know, banning people, going over everything. And it's YouTube. It's just not worth it. Wikipedia has been a joke, a co-opted bad joke, because I believed in it in the beginning. No, it's an intelligence operative. The whole thing's been, if it wasn't planned that way, it's been co-opted.
Yeah, certainly, you know, we have a lot of things to be concerned about. And going to the, you know, Public Order Emergency Commission, which lasted for 6 weeks back in the fall of 2022, I certainly know that there were a lot of problems with the official account, having read occasional statements like the CBC ombudsman published in the fall of 2022 that actually, no, there were no, you know, the whole convoy, the whole protest in Ottawa was not instigated by the Russians, for example. So, you know, you get these admissions, or, and by the way, the protesters did not come to Ottawa to set apartment buildings on fire, and the two ne'er-do-wells who clumsily, ineffectively tried to set a lobby of one apartment building on fire one morning on a weekend were well familiar to the local Ottawa police as, you know, pyromaniacs or whatever, but they were not protesters themselves at all. And there were no guns in the protest vehicles in Ottawa and so on. But for many people who read the headlines and then take them as gospel, they won't see some small article in the back of section E, page 14, that there's been a retraction. I mean, that's the problem that we have today, is that you can have all of this alarmist, catastrophizing stories about how something is the way it is, and then you'll have some admission that it's not the case later on. But that story gets buried, and what people get left with is their impression that in 2022 in Ottawa, the Parliament Hill and the surrounding area were run amok with Nazis waving swastikas, which, you know, turns out not to be true.
And then Trudeau has the Zelensky there, and they invite a Nazi who gets a standing ovation. I mean, if there was ever karma, you know, there he is, right? Now, yeah. I also came across a story which I was unaware of, and I'm not sure if you can shed any light on, about a Dr. Charles Hoff.
Sure. Yeah, I've met him. Yeah.
Oh, you have. Tell people just a little bit about this case, because it's interesting to me. Just want to help shed some light on that.
Dr. Charles Hoff is a family physician who had a practice in Lytton, a little town in the Fraser River area. It's about
British Columbia, Canada.
It's in British Columbia, Canada, in the interior of the province. Small town, and he, as really as a responsible doctor. I mean, when a doctor finds out that a patient has had an adverse reaction to a medication or a vaccine, I think it's their legal duty to report to their health authority or public health officer to let them know that there's been this reaction, so that they collect the data, so that if a certain number of people are having a problem with something, then they know maybe to take it off the market, you know, some anxiety pill or whatever, right? So he was doing what he was supposed to do, and he found about a dozen of his patients at a certain point in the spring of 2021 were having serious reactions. I think myocarditis and, you know, heart issues and so on. And instead of the old reaction would have been for people in public health to thank him for letting them know that his patients were having a bad reaction to, in this case, the new vaccine. And instead they've made an example out of him to punish him for letting them know about the adverse reactions, and are trying to take his license away. And it's very kind of Kafka-esque. I think that the tribunal or whatever it is still coming up. They keep changing the dates, but it's upon us soon.
Yeah, well, just from my brief knowledge, though, I think it was about 28 instances, but he reported, I think, 14 that were like, no, this is cut and dried. I gave the guy the vaccine, and within half an hour, you know, whatever, you know, reaction, you know, just believe it at that, you know, things happened. He reported them, right? And now he hired some lawyers, and because it's years later, they've got a lot of facts and figures to back up. It's worse than people thought, and it's even worse than he thought. And now I think when they're going to court, the other side, the prosecution there, is looking at all those documents, and they're shitting, you know, like just a holy, like we got to stop this trial from happening or something, because if this gets out to the public, were really, I mean, it's bad enough if, you know, like for instance, let's say the vaccine was only 50% effective. They said, listen, we're going to give you something. It's only a 50-50 chance that it'll work for you, right? But if they said it's a 50-50 chance that you're going to have an adverse reaction, that this is going to cause problems, like, you know, people can say, well, I'm going to, like you said, hesitancy. I'm going to decide whether 50-50 is good enough odds for me. Like maybe I'm okay with just getting COVID and I'm not overweight. I'm not diabetic. I'm not, you know, 88 years old, you know, or I have damaged immune system. I mean, the case of the football player Aaron Rodgers, the doctors told him there's something, I'm not sure if the word substrate is whatever, but it was something in how they make the virus. That's he's allergic to it, and they know for sure it'll cause adverse reactions, if not death, right?
Yeah.
And you go, how many other people have allergies to and I'm not sure how they make them. I mean, I've heard an interview or two, and that's it. So, but I just find it funny that these governments, that they're trying to make an example of somebody, and then they say, okay, well, I'll defend myself in court. Let's go to court. I'll show you. Let's look at the documents. Let's look at them, right? And I think the famous case of people will look about Fauci saying, it's not this, it's not that, and no, it isn't, you know, and then the records, the emails have surfaced, you know, there where they're talking to each other saying, we can't let this get out. You go, no wonder there's a hesitancy.
Yeah. Well, in Canada, we have Dr. Celia Lorenko told, I think, a federal labor board, which was, I guess they were in the summer of 2022, were concerned about, the labor market, and there's more and more people who are going on disability because, you know, they're suddenly getting heart conditions and whatever else, right? So she was asked to comment about the reactions to the vaccine, and at one point she said, well, it's a well-known fact that there's a lot of underreporting regarding, you know, adverse reactions to this vaccine. And you take that in the context of doctors in the National Citizens Inquiry testifying, like Dr. Charles Hoff and others, about how they would try and let public health authorities know that their patients were having these adverse reactions. And you would have public health officers chiding the doctors, you know, warning them, you got to stop letting me know about these adverse reactions. Or like there was one doctor, forget his name, but he was in Ontario, and he let them know about 10 reactions. And they let one go forward that they would report into their system of somebody getting a rash, which is not great. It was like, you know, all over their body. But the other 9 reactions were far more severe, and they wouldn't allow any of those. And so in that kind of a system where they're filtering out all kinds of reports and just letting us a sliver of them go forward, it's interesting to know that if you look on the if you look in the labyrinth of the Health Canada website today and see their most recent data from early January of 2024, they allow that 488 people who received the vaccine in Canada have died. Now, in the past, if someone dies of getting a medication or a vaccine, usually it's a news story. We know the name of the person who died, and isn't it sad, and, you know, people are going to look into us. But no, 488 people have died officially from getting this vaccine, and not a word about it. Not a word on the CBC.
Yeah, and then the other side of the coin is I've heard this anecdotally that, guy car accident, comes into the hospital, they check his blood, he's got COVID, cause of death, COVID.
Well, you know, my book that's coming out later this spring, I talked to a paramedic, is kind of the top flight of paramedics that deals with the most difficult cases in the Toronto area. And she was letting me know that there was a shift, the night shift was late coming in because they had a jumper from the 8th floor of a building, an apartment building in downtown Toronto. And so later that she went to help, you know, and they had to basically, you know, spatulas because the jumper was in no shape. Like there was no intact body. So pretty gruesome. Later on that day, they get a phone call from public health in Ontario informing the paramedic that the jumper has been listed as a COVID death. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it's Twilight Zone stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if you heard me. I said that's Twilight Zone stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I need to go watch that TV show again now.
Oh, God.
See what
Thief
else.
Thief or Vendetta. That's the one I recommend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, there was a trial update on Rumble for Dr. Charles Hoff. Somebody interviewed him on March 7th. And it's just interesting. And all, you know, all these are small things. I'm generally not... don't follow health things, and I didn't really follow too much. But, you know, they kind of keep popping up, and, you know, you say, something's crooked here, and I, you know, maybe I should spend a little more time on it because it's more crooked than I even imagined. And what was that? I think Elon Musk, one day he said, well, what are your pronouns? And they are, prosecute Fauci is my pronoun.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, like, wow.
Yeah. You know.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for writing this. I did want to bring up any updates of what the Coots for there, another kind of ridiculous thing, and also Menzies, and we'll make a link to that. Sure. Is there anything you wanted to bring up that I didn't get to?
I'll just mention that I think that there's been a subsequent arrest of David Menzies with Rebel News in the last few weeks. So I'll see if I can find that story because he seems to keep getting in the crosshairs of the police, especially in Toronto, whenever he goes to report something
right.
in the news. There.
And, you know, sometimes I mention these people. It doesn't mean I'm a total fan of them or supporting everything. You know, I think I saw the police were called one time. He was... in a swimming meet, and there was a trans person in there, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like a 50-year-old man in the 16-year-old girl's locker.
12-year-old,
yeah, you know what I mean? I didn't want to be too out. And, you go, this is crazy. So he's there with the microphone on trying to get an interview and try to get somebody to talk about it. And they wanted him out of the building. They found him uncomfortable and that, and the cops were called. So I wouldn't be surprised that he's arrested for some, you know, and I wouldn't call it a stunt, but he's just trying to, for Rebel News, for people who want to read that and look at those stories. He's doing his job saying, this is what I feel is important. And if you don't like it, change the channel or, you know, don't turn it on. But, you know, it's the same with Alex Jones. And, you know, I try to watch Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson and Russell Brand and you know, keep up to date with what's going on. And but every now and then you turn on the regular mainstream news and it's like, oh my God.
Well, it's something's happened to some of the old reliable media that
Russia's unprovoked attack. Can you believe it? It's unprovoked.
Yeah.
All right, Ray, thank you so much for making time for me today.
It's good to speak with you as always, Len. Thank you.
Well, that's good. It's the same, man. You know, when you find somebody who's doing good work such as you are, I'm just always interested. Anytime you got an article, I'll have you on to help promote it or steer people to the websites that promote your work as well.
Okay, great. Take care.
All right, then. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you later. And keep in touch. Email me anytime.
Will do.
All right. Good night.
Night.